So, gentlemen, we're in Project Crest on the Dallas, above Mesilla. And we got down, halfway down the block, halfway down the outlet over here. Actually, three lines beneath halfway down, and we're up to Rumi Barhama. Now, you'll recall, well, the skipper is here, we can now begin. You'll recall that we're trying to figure out a reason for why we would demand payment in a case where there was a question as to which animal had died. Why we're relying on Bori Vashema, in this case Bori August. And the case, as given in the Mishnah, seemed to have been a very simple case, a straightforward case. Somebody borrows a korah with an arrangement that the half of the day is going to be borrowed and half of the day it's going to be rented. Or one day borrowed and one day rented. Or he takes two korahs, one which is borrowed and one which is rented. It's sort of a two-for-one kind of deal, right? Whether it's two for one simultaneously, two for one 2 days for one, or whether it's you're paying half rate, so one part of it is shirut, part of it is shirimah. And the Mishnah says that if the mashiel says he knows that the one that had been rented was the one that had died, so then he would have to pay if he says, well, I'm not sure. And we couldn't figure out why that would be true. So we said, if you want to say, I mean, unless you hold it to the Chalal of Bori Vashema Bar Yadav, if you don't hold the Chalal of Bori Vashema Bar Yadav, then Renachin's approach was that we always, in cases where a Mishnah introduces the idea of Bori Vashema, it's always talking about a case in which anywhere you have to swear. Once you have to swear, since you couldn't possibly swear and say that you knew what happened, because you're saying you don't know what happened, so you'll have no choice but to say, that's how we arrange the case. So, all right, so we were able to satisfy the requirement for Reb Nachman by simply adding an additional korah. So in case one, we said that it's talking about where he was really a motor mimic, huh? So that there was an additional korah that had not been mentioned, is what we said. And that the question over here was, okay, he's motored him on that, and then the other one he says, look, that's the one I don't know. So he says, all right, since you're a motor mimic, you have to swear. He says, well, I don't know, how can I swear? He says, well, then you'll have to pay. So we simply added a korah. In the second case in the Mishnah, which is the last case, we added a parah to make three parahs, so that there was one parah that was, as the case given, b'sheila, one b'sirut, and then there was another one b'sheila, which again, it looks on the surface, it looks far-fetched, but the reason it looks far-fetched to suggest these cases is because we're not seeing it in context. Every time we have a Bori Vashema element, if you hold it, Bori Vashema, you don't say Bori Yadav, it means that we take for granted that there is another thing that's not mentioned here that is forcing you into the position of Shua. So, Manela, that's a given in the Mishnah. And we don't have to talk it out every single time. Now, the complicating issue is if you hold of Rumi Bar Chama. Now, Rumi Bar Chama we had a number of times before. According to Rumi Bar Chama, in the middle of the Parsha of Shomer Chinam in the Torah, it says in that parsha, instead of simply saying that the people should come to court and he should take an oath, it says, "Al kol dvar pesha asher yomar ki hu zeh." In any case where somebody points to something and says, "That's it," what in the world? Then they come to court and they go to the Elohim and they swear, right? What is Asher Yomar Ki Hu Zeh? No, Ki Hu Zeh is the basis of the idea of Motiv Amigdah. Ki Hu Zeh means it is this and not what you are saying it is. Because that's what it means. Ki Hu Zeh, this is what it was, not what you are claiming that it was. Now that obviously doesn't mean that I deny your claim entirely, because otherwise what am I pointing to? This is what it was. And simply saying it wasn't. You're saying it was, and you think I'm saying it wasn't. Well, then we never get to court. But if we're arguing about what the thing was, I'm saying, oh, well, it was 2 gallons. You're saying, oh, it was 1 gallon. Right? So then we get to court. Fine. What is that doing in the middle of the parsha of Shavuotina? So you will remember that there is a major machlokas as to whether this is called Iruv Parshiot, that what's happened over here is that once the Torah is telling us dinim of shvua, it inserts the dinim of shvua that come from normal civil intercourse, such as borrowings and so on. There's a contractual argument. There's an argument about how much money is still owed, and so on and so forth. That, along with shvua hashomrim, two separate issues. That's talking about other elements. And then there's the shvua hashomrim. Were you a poshea or were you not a poshea? That's the simple way of learning the pasuk. However, Rami Bar Chama doesn't learn it that way. Rami Bar Chama says it's ridiculous to think that the Torah throws in dinim of shvua together so that it's mixing in a dinim malva v'alova in the middle of the parasha shomer. That's unacceptable. Therefore, we'll have to say that by putting it here, the Torah is telling us that you only get involved in a shvua hashomrim once triggered by a standard mode of a mitzvah. So in other words, according to Rami Bar Chama, a shomer will never take a shvua unless there's also a mode of a mitzvah element there. In other words, I admit the part and I deny the other part. But the other element of Rami Bar Chama, gentlemen, is what bothers us here. Because the fact that we have to be talking about a mode of a mitzvah, we've already said we're talking about a mode of a mitzvah, irregardless of Rami Bar Chama, because we needed to figure out why there would be a shvua here, since it's not a normal case of shvua as a shomer. Since we're arguing whether you are a shomer, not about what happened to the animal. We're arguing about what animal it happened to. Was it an animal that you were a shomer on or wasn't a shomer on, correct? So we don't have a shvua to shomer in here. And that's why we created a case that was a classic Rami Bar Chama case, essentially, you think. No, you think that what we did was is we turned this into a shvua that was triggered by mode of the mitzvah rather than by shvua to shomer. However, there's another element in Rami Bar Chama that is not addressed. Am I talking to you, or does anyone have any idea what I'm talking about here? All right.
No idea.
That wouldn't have gotten you through on your global position.
No, precision.
Well, how about if I make a deal?
I know which ocean I'm in, you know.
Yeah, we're getting close. Yeah, I'll believe they're all connected, I suppose. Now, how about giving me some of your GPS attention? Okay, so now the additional problem of Rami Bar Chama is that Rami Bar Chama insists on a tefira and a hodaah. He learned, at least the way Rashi understands Rami Bar Chama, according to him, this is the way we're understanding this word. He learns that he who's there, not simply is telling me that there needs to be a mode of a mikvah about a shomer chiman, or about any of the shomer, but also that there needs to be a clear cut tefila. It's this and not that. Who's there? This and not that. Now, if I say I don't know, I'm not saying it's this and not that. I'm saying I don't know. So if I say I don't know, I don't trigger a shvua of mode of a mitzvah, according to Rami Bar Chama. Therefore, according to Rami Bar Chama, I need to introduce yet a third element over here, you see. The way we had it is, we only had to introduce one additional element. What was that additional element? The other para that he's willing to admit, oh yes, that one did die, yes, I do owe you. That was mode of a mitzvah. Once is a mode of a mitzvah. So what about the rest? To where? Well, I don't know. Well, if you don't know, you'll have to pay. But that's how we understood the surgery. According to Rami Bar Chama, we can't come along and say, so you agree to some of it? And then swear about the rest. No. Wait a minute. I'm not denying the rest. Maybe it's true. I don't know. So unless there's a portion that you denied, you won't have to swear about anything. Because saying I don't know is not a denial. So what triggers the shvua, according to Rami Bar Chama, is the fact that somebody openly says to me, you're lying, or you're wrong. So then I could think to him, yeah, swear that I'm wrong. You see? But if he never says, you're wrong, or you're lying, then I can't say to him, swear that I'm lying. So now, that would mean that in our case, simply saying, well, I don't know whether it was the other one or not, is insufficient. Therefore, we have to postulate two additional elements besides the one mentioned in the Mishnah. So what's the additional element? There will have to be in another Torah that he says, oh yes, you're quite right about that one. I do owe you for that one. Okay, that we already said. That's the mode of a mitzvah.
But according to Rabbi Bar Chama, there has to be yet another Farah from which he said, what? That one never existed. I don't know what you're talking about. There never was a third Farah. And then there's the Farah that we're arguing about. Well, I'm not sure if it was during the time that I borrowed it or it was during the time that I rented it. So then you have motive of mixture. Code for the mix-up, and then you have the question, well, I don't know what happened to the other part, and that, since you can't swear, you'll have to pay. Because once we've triggered the shvua because of the mother of the mix-up part, now you'll have to swear on the whole thing. Which means that according to Rabbi Bar Chama, in the last chalak of the Mishnah, where we were willing to talk about two parot originally, we now have to talk about four parot. One para is the one in which I'm saying, oh yes, there was a para that I definitely owed. One para is one in which the master said, well, what about the fourth para? And you turn around and said, what fourth para? You're out of your cotton picking mind. There never was a fourth para. That was the kira. And now we're arguing, well, which one of the paras died? Was it the one that I had borrowed or was it the one that I had rented? Okay. That you're arguing about, and since you have to make a shvua on the motive of mixtus part, you will now have to make a shvua, which you cannot make in Zanano, on the question of which para died, the shvua or the shvula, and then you'll have to pay.
Okay.
So, don't pretend.
No,
don't pretend.
No. ABC, but otherwise you understand better.
ABC.
A was yes, B was yes, and so on. Each one is the final is the sure.
And then you'll be happy.
And then I will be close to the father.
Okay, we'll give these parahs names. In the first case of our mission, we have parah A.
Yeah.
That's the parah that I lent you.
Good.
It's not mentioned in the Mishnah. We have parah B. That's the para that I claim that I lent you. That's not in the Mishnah either. We have para C, which I both lent you and rented to you, depending on what hour of the day it is. The first half of the day it was a rental, the second half of the day it was a borrowing. Okay? Para A, you say to me, oh dear, it died, I'll have to pay you back. Para B, you say to me, there never was a para B. And for a C, you say to me, well, I'm not sure whether it died during the rental period or during the borrow period.
Where's the fourth power?
Huh?
Where's the fourth power?
That's in the Seifa. That's where we started off. The last case in the Mishnah was that it wasn't the question of what hour of the day, it was which animal. One animal was when it was a two-car rental for the price of one. So one of them was a borrowing, and one of them was a rental.
And
so over there, we had C and D.
And that car is still in the field chewing.
One of those cars is still placidly chewing its gas. The other one is a mangled heap of metal on the bottom of the East River. Now, it's a question of which one it is.
Because
the guy doesn't say. A, the guy pays. He says, I owe you.
And
B? B, he denies it ever happening.
So he
has to swear.
Okay.
But since he's swearing about B, he has to swear about C and D, whose disposition he's unaware of. Exactly. That's why he's going to have to pay. There you got it. Now it makes sense. Now that they've got names. Very good. I appreciate it.
This is the part of the column B.
When the mission says what?
The column B.
Which doesn't say puzzle. He says, that's Christ. That's our problem. Why is he Christ? That's precisely what our problem is. We're trying to explain why is he Christ. We're saying he's Christ because he has to swear and he can't swear. Not because every Bari Vashema necessarily would be Bari Yavi. No, he can't swear. No, he can't. Right.
Not sure.
It pays to know the case before we have the discussion. He doesn't know what he has to swear about. He obviously can't swear about it then. He can't swear. Okay, so now let's see all of this inside so that you can get your ABCs correct. Says the Gemara, L'Rami Bar Chama. Now what about according to Rami Bar Chama? Rami Bar Chama holds that Arba Shomrim Tzrichim Shvira V'Miksa, Kodada Miksa. Before we even get to discuss a Shvuat HaShomrim, we need to have
a mode of a mikvah and a clear of a mikvah. A clear of a mikvah is not satisfied by saying, I don't know. A clear of a mikvah says that you say categorically, you lie, or you're wrong. Now that we don't have over here. So according to him, we'll have to add an additional para. Mashkachas l'reisha b'shloshah b'sefer b'arba'ah. The case in our mission, in order to avoid the question, sir, you're the youngest of the, didn't help much anyway. Okay, so the ratio would have to add one additional para, and the safer would have to add one additional para, which in order to satisfy the requirement of tvira, and this is how it would work. Ratio kishlosha. The first two cases in the Mishnah are talking about three paros. The Amale, the guy who's suing, says, I gave you three paros. Shalosh parot natati lecha. Pagad yume v'sheila, pagad yume v'sperut. Or chad yume v'sheila v'chad yume v'sperut. I gave you three parot with an arrangement of one day rental and one day or half of the day. Umeitu. Now, they all three of them, meitu shloshaku v'din sheila. They all died while they were borrowed. That's what I say. The respondee says, well, one of those never existed. I don't know what you're talking about. There never were three paros. It was one. So there were two. One of them, yes, I must admit that a terrible tragedy happened to my wallet, at least, and I'll have to say, Binan Sheila Mesa. Now, the other one, I don't know when it died. Lo Yadani Binan Sheila Mesa, Obi Yidan Mitzvirut Mesa. I'm not sure. And he talks to me, Okoli Shabbat, since he can't possibly swear on something he's not sure about, Mishalei. He'll have to pay. Save for the last case of the Mishnah, which was talking about two different animals, one of which was rented and one of which was borrowed, would be talking about the Arba'ah. Over here, the one who brings suit claims, I gave you four separate parot, three of which were an arrangement of Sheila, one of which was an arrangement of Sfirut. They all died. The three died, and the three that died are the ones that were borrowed. The Shoal says, well, first of all, there never were four. There were only three. But you lie about that. And then one of them, yes, that's the tragedy that I'll have to pay for. For Kodain, the Shalomite. Edok, as far as the other one that died, I'm not sure whether the one that's alive is the one that had been rented, and therefore the one that died was the borrowed one. Or the one that has been borrowed is the one that's that died, and the one that's alive is rented. I'm not sure. Lo yadani dispute made of the kaima of the sheila. I'm not sure if the rental died and the one that is here in front of us is the borrowed, or the sheila made of the kaima dispute, or whether it was the borrowed one that died and the one that's in front of us here is the rental. Can he talk to you? Call the shavan. The shavan. Since he cannot swear, he pays.
Can I swear that I don't know?
No.
Oh, okay.
You won't satisfy the Shvuah. I mean, that's what the Shvuah wants you to tell me, what it is that you do about Dina, because I do know. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, I do know. So if you want to respond to me, it doesn't help you to say, I don't know. That's right. That's why he's able to swear.
On this one he swears?
Yes, on this one he swears, but he has to stay on the other. Yeah.
And other he has.
Yeah. Well, first of all, there is such a shita because of Bari Vashema. But I'm saying we're going here a libet of Nachman, because normally Bari Vashema is insufficient. However, over here you already entered into a transaction with somebody. Because of the nature of the transaction, you were responsible to make a shvuah. Since you entered into a transaction of skewers with him, since you need, you know, that was your problem. If you would never have had anything to do with him, obviously he would have told you something, he would have said drop that and turned away from him, and they wouldn't have had any responsibility. But over here you admit to having entered a transaction in which you cannot prove that you're innocent. Okay, he says he knows that's because of the nature of your original agreement that you're going to have to pay. You can't come out of the blue and claim to you that you owe him money. Continues the Mishnah. Zelmer Shulav Zelmer Kuram Yishava Tokesh Kuram Mita. If there's a question as to whether the Shu'ula died or the Skura died, and each one of them claims that they know, let the renter swear that it was the rental that died and that he's not responsible. Now the question is, why does he have to swear at all in this case? There's no motive in mikvah. We're going back now to our simple reading of the Mishnah, not only the Rav Nachman. And we're talking about, according to the Shitas of all, that there is no Eruv Parshiyot here, and there is no need for us to postulate other Shvarim or Parot that are not mentioned. So what's going on? They're arguing about a Parah, and all of a sudden, as Rav Eid just asked, the poor Zocher has to swear. Why does he have to swear? He's saying, I know this Quran made. I go, well, why should I have to swear to you? What, was there a motive in this stuff? They're arguing past each other. It's not as if I agree that half of what it was that you gave me died and the other half didn't. We're arguing about, for all intents and purposes, which animal. It doesn't matter whether this happens to be the same animal which during the first half of the day is classified as A and during the second half of the day is classified as B. That's not arguing about the same thing. That's arguing about A versus B. It's apples and oranges. There's no motive to mix us here at all. I don't admit anything. What it is that I do admit has nothing to do with what you're claiming I owe you. So why do I have to make a shvua? Where is such a shvua demanded by the Torah? Precisely what you were asking. Says the Gemara, the problem over here is that the shvua that he would have to take is demanded by the nature of his chirut. It's al yaday gilgul. The guy is coming along and he's saying it was the rented animal that died. But let's imagine a simple situation in which there only was a rental animal. Now the guy comes along and says, where's my cow? He says, it died. Okay, what's his response? Swear to me that you weren't negligent about my cow. Can you do that? Absolutely. That's a standard for the Charlie. Unless you're the Rami Bar Koma. We're not on the Rami Bar Koma right now. Okay. So the guy says, fine, I'm happy to swear that your cow died of natural causes, of nothing to do with my negligence. But then the guy says, well, wait a minute now. While you're at it, why don't you also swear that it was during the time of the day that you claim it died, because I don't know. I think it was, I know in this case, that it was in the morning, not in the afternoon. And if it's the morning, you owe me for the morning. Now, normally, I couldn't make you swear to that, because we're at loggerheads. But now, once you're swearing already, sir, why don't you just add in this additional piece of information? My animal died of natural causes at 2 p.m. Since you don't want to do that, you'll have to pay me. Unless you do want to do that. In other words, I could be mechayev you a shvua with a gilgul shvua. Right? A rollover shvua. I can roll the shvua over on you because you owe it to me anyway. And therefore, amarula al yadei gilgul. The amarle, because he can always tell him, ishtabala yizuniyot, dikidarka neita. At least swear to me that this animal died naturally. And since he has to swear, because it's a normal Shrat HaShomrim, which even he admits that he is, so he has to swear that it was naturally a natural death, so he'll have to swear at what time of the day, or which animal it was that had died this natural death. Continues the Mishnah. Both of them say, well, I don't know. I wasn't here. So what do we do now? So the Mishnah says we split it. Our money sunkasi. The Amar Mamun Hamutal B'Tafei Kokim. This apparently is going according to sunkas, because we who hold Hamotzei Nechaviro Alav Haraya. If you want to prove that somebody owes you money, then go prove it. But don't say because we cannot establish who owes whom, therefore we should split it. Our Mishnah doesn't hold to that. Our Mishnah follows the non-normative view of Sumchas, who holds that once you get into a mess and you don't know who's responsible, you split the responsibility. Now, ask Rabbi Bar Mama, Sha'alad Ba'alim, suppose you start off a deal borrowing something while having the owner in your employ. And that could mean even getting you a drink of water, as it turned out, right? Jasper. Or a drink of Coke. See? You see? You see how much it hurts? You have to keep good friends. So suppose you started off with Baalim, and then Sakrat Shaloba Baalim. Then you go and you make a new arrangement now where you're going to pay rent. So the guy says, look, I want my part back. Say, you know what, I'm still in Manila working. How about if I pay you for it? I really appreciate that you lent me this part up until now. I'm ready to change the arrangement now. So at this point, I become a socher. Now, at the time that I became a socher, I wasn't smart enough to ask him for another glass of water. Or maybe he got smart. So what's the deal? Do we say that the she'ilah l'chudakayma, the she'ilah l'chudakayma, do we say that this sechirut is not a rollover of the she'ilah, it's a new arrangement, and as a new arrangement it was without the owners being in my employ, and therefore I become responsible? Or do we say sechirut b'she'ilah misha shachin? Or do we say that any subsequent sefirut is subsumed by the initial she'ela, because a sefirut essentially is a limitation of my original responsibility which covered even accidents, and now I'm keeping the parah on the same basis, except that now I'm not responsible for accidents. But if that's the case, then I would have to view this transaction as being a continuation of the previous transaction, which I would say, I initially took this para out of your hands, was koneh it as a shoel. Now it was in my rishus, and since it was in my rishus, no new kinyonim were necessary. So we changed the deal. Changing the deal simply means I limited my exposure by paying you up front. That's how we look at it. I'm paying you up front. In exchange for paying you up front, I am not responsible for accident, right? Okay, so then we could view this as a modified shayla. So, would we look at it that way? Because, I mean, at this point, I'm still having your neighbor vibrate. And if you're ready to look at it this way, if you're ready to say that sira, the shayla, misha shayla, that rentals are always subsumed by a prior borrower, what about the other way around? What about if you started off with an agreement of rental? And that was when you had the owner in your employ. And then your rental period was completed, and you said, listen, do me a favor, I need another 2 hours. Just, well, let me use it another 2 hours, will you? And the guy says, okay. So at this point it becomes borrowing. You're not paying him anymore. Just ask him a favor. We made a deal for 24 hours, but I'm not finished. Let me keep it another 2 hours. Okay, so in that case, what's the difference? Do we say that sirut vadai lo shayecha? Do we say that? Well, I mean, you certainly can't say that she'ela is part of sefirut, because she'ela is an increase in exposure. It's not a limitation of your exposure, so that it must be a new deal. Or maybe we should say even here, even the she'ela b'miktzat k'man the she'ela b'kulatami. Or do we say that, well, but I mean, there's some elements of it that could be viewed as a continued relationship. In other words, initially when I had rented it, I was chayav for gnei b'aveda. Now that I'm borrowing it for another 2 hours, I'm still chayav for the gnei b'aveda, except that I have additional exposure that I'm also responsible for accident. So do we say that at least that element is still connected to the original agreement? I originally agreed to pay for gnei b'aveda, but since you were in my employ at the time, I don't have to pay for gnei b'aveda. In which case, we should continue that arrangement. Or do we say, no, this is entirely a new arrangement? Okay, now, let's assume that Kiva Nishayaka, okay, so let's assume then for a moment, that's the next question, that we will not say that Kiva Nishayaka Mitzvah Shema Nishayaka Kuladami, then what would be the case if I borrowed it? The borrowing, remember, was the broader responsibility. So I borrowed it with borrowing. I then come along and say, you know, it's really very kind of you to lend it to me, and I know you need it back, but how about if I pay it for the next, I need it another 24 hours. Okay, the guy says, fine, you pay me for the next 24 hours, I pay you. The 24 hours end, and I say, all right, look, I really need it for another 2 hours. Would you leave it by me for another 2 hours? And he leaves it for another 2 hours. So now we have she'elah, the tefirut, going back into a she'elah, correct? Now, this is a fairly common occurrence, by the way, I mean, if you think about it. Right. So now, what happens in this case? Now, do we say that in this case, that in such a case we should say that the she'ela goes back to the way it was? Or do we say that Schirut now has interrupted the relationship of the She'ela? We can no longer reassume the initial She'ela. Now, this seems to be predicated, there's a lot of discussion as to what the problem over here is, since we were willing to assume that Schirut is assumed in She'ela. And it gets a little complex, but the issue over here clearly will revolve around the question of whether you can extend it for the third time based on the original arrangement, right? So even though I now am saying, let's say I'm willing to agree that Chirut was Mishach Shayach in the She'ela, but what would be the basis of the Kinyan now to turn it into a She'ela, since I'm attempting to extend my Chiyuvim beyond the Chirut now the second time? Would I be able to extend those as a component of the first She'ela, in which case it was a continued agreement with the Baalim, or would there need to be a new Kinyan to be Machayev me now in the new She'ela, and therefore this time it wasn't the Baalim? Something along those lines. Again, as I say, it's a little bit too complicated for us to discuss here, but that would be our question. And there's also many different approaches, but it's not easily defined. And I have to admit also that it's more complicated than that, because some have the Girsa that started, instead of saying Intim Solomon Lo Amin Intim and the Shaykha, they start off by saying Intim Solomon Shaykha, which completely changes the whole thing. How about we start off with Sirut, and then you go ahead and you ask for it to be left in your Rishus another 2 hours. And then at the end of 2 hours, the guy comes back and says, you finished yet? And you say, look, I'm not finished. How about if I rent it from you again? I'll rent it for another day. Right? Also a fairly common arrangement. So over there, this happens all the time with rental cars, right? You get to the point at which okay, they're going to throw in an extra hour. But you need it more in the hour, I'll rent it another day. What the heck? So now, the question over here is, in this case, could we say that the Schirut now has gone back to the way it was originally? Or do we say that in this case, the She'ela, which was more difficult as an aspect, the She'ela was Mastik, because the She'ela was an extension of the Yuvim, and it was Mastik Beni Beni, it doesn't allow you to go back to the original Schirut table. That remains the question.
All these
papers, No. First of all, there's the important yisod of the Gaonim, that in any intim saloma, the last intim saloma is the assumption. In other words, whatever the Gemara says, and if you're ready to say, it means, yes, we're ready to say that. Let's take the next job. So when you have a list of takers, your problem is only going to be on the last one. Then, of course, it depends whether you're talking about a Drabbanan, you're talking about a Diraish, you're talking about Mammon, you're talking about Isser. Each one has its rule about how to pasken. And if you're talking about Mammonis, then it's the question, who's the Muktzik in the money, and who's the Motzi in the money, and so on, right? That's just for quite some time. This is probably going to get us a lot of money from our web listeners. Should have set it up front if we have it. Ha'sho'elet ha'para, yosho'cholo b'yad b'no, b'yad avdo, b'yad shlucho, or b'yad avdo, b'yad avdo, b'yad shlucho shel ha'sho'el. Somebody borrows a parah, and the guy sends him over this parah with his son, or with his servant, or with his shliach. Now, with his shliach does not mean what it seems to mean. With his shliach means someone who normally does work for him. It may even mean, this is a machlokes we have back in the comment, it may even mean someone who is specifically designated in front of witnesses for this purpose, but nonetheless was not designated as someone who would be an acceptor of the responsibility of the transfer. So in other words, I may have let you know that this guy is reliable. It doesn't mean I let you know that the moment that it gets into his hands, I take responsibility. You see, that's a machlokes we have in the comment. So the problem over here is the delivery man is not a borrower. So until it gets into the hands of the borrower, who's responsible? That's the question.
Still in the hands of the...
Exactly what the Mishnah is saying. It's still in the hands of the Yerushalayim.
Now, the Mishaleach can have his own problem with the delivery man. He'd say, I think it's delivery man, okay, so I'm a Sokher. You know, that's a separate issue, or I ask you to do me a favor, okay, so I'm a Shobatina, whatever it is. But the Shoah could certainly say, look, I mean, I thank you very much for sending it over and everything, but you know, I never got it. So even though this is somebody that always works with me, I mean, I certainly never told you that he could sign a receipt, and that at that moment it becomes my responsibility. So in all of these cases, even if he sends it with the Shoel's own children, the Shoel says, thank you, but I mean, I never intended to accept responsibility, so it gets into my Rishon. So therefore, Umeita, if it dies, then it's probably because he was responsible for accident. However, Amarlo Hashoel, if the borrower tells him, Shalchali biyad b'ni biyad abdi biyad shluchi, send it to me by giving it to my son, or my servant, or this workman, or you send it with your son, or even if the lender says to him, look, I'm going to be sending it to you with my son, I'm going to be sending it to you with my servant, or with my shliach, or I'm going to give it to your boy. In all of these cases, if the shoel, the amalei ha-shoel, the shoel says to him, okay, good, shalach, send it with it, v'shalcha, and then he sends it to a mason and dies. In this case, he would be chayav. As long as we have the borrower indicating that he is ready to go with this arrangement, then he's considered to be a borrower at that time. And the same thing is true in the inverse. In the inverse, it would be the same thing. If the shoel sends it back now with his, or the mashil's son, it would not be Yosef from his responsibility. He's still responsibility until the time the lender gets it. Unless the lender says, okay, send it back now with my son. Okay, fine. In other words, I can give it to your son. Yes.
Why isn't
that something about his son now? What's the difference? It slows the Asma. Right? A son, obviously, where the guy, you know.
So then why
didn't
he dedicate
it to the son? You don't. It slows the Asma. You don't really. Remember, the Mishnah will often do that. It'll say, this, and by the way, even this, and even that. It sends it outward. No, that's not it at all. There's no question who delivered the car. Whoever was appointed to deliver the car will deliver the car. The question is who takes responsibility for acceptance of the car.
So you should never tell the person how to send it.
If you don't want responsibility. Yeah, or you should say, look, I will assume responsibility when it gets into my rishus. You can set it to FedEx if you like. It's in your hand. Yeah, even if they, you can FedEx it. The understanding of you can FedEx it is that FedEx is going to be responsible so it gets to me. And that's already a norm. Or you could insure it. Yeah, then it would be your responsibility. You'd have to argue with your insurer. But you're insuring it would obviously mean that you're taking responsibility. That's why normally the sender insures, because the sender sees it as his responsibility. All right, gentlemen, it's been something of a pleasure. I wouldn't say a motive of a mix-up, but I certainly want to say...